Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello, Cooles. Welcome to Barca Talk. I'm your host, Gabriel Quiroga, here in the Spanish capital. In today's episode, we're going to talk about FC Femenil's Manita over the weekend and obviously Gabi's injury. Before we dive into today's topics, we have a special invitation for all you Barca fans out there. If you're craving more Barca content, we have the perfect hub for you, our Patreon community. It's not just a community, it's a virtual peña where your passion for FC Barcelona finds company and conversation. For $5 a month, here's some of the perks. Dive into commercial-free episodes of Barca Talk. It's all football, no interruption. Be part of our international WhatsApp group where the Barca chatter never ends. Get insightful post-game match reports and obviously help support the podcast. Hit the link in the show notes and join our virtual peña. All right, let's get into today's episode right after this brief break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right, as I said at the top of the episode, we're going to talk about FCB Femenil today and as well as Gabi's injury. And to join the conversation, I have Craig McGuff who joins me. Craig, how you doing?
Really good. Yourself?
Yeah, not bad. We were just kind of talking beforehand, just getting ready for the holidays. They're fastly approaching. We have Thanksgiving that I'm celebrating this week with American friends all over the place. And then Christmas is right around the corner. So
it's exciting times. It's Thanksgiving Thursday.
Yeah, and I have some dinner plans Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday. So I'm going to be...
It's my 10th wedding anniversary on Thursday.
Oh.
And I have a lot to be thankful for. She's amazing. So that's pretty cool. We'll both be celebrating.
That is cool. Well, we have just two kind of topics that are kind of circling FC Barcelona's atmosphere this past couple of days. Obviously, we're going to talk about the Gavi injury, which took most of that... good feelings over the weekend with FCB Femenil, but I want to go into that conversation because I think this is one of the first times you actually watched the full match of Femenil over the weekend with the Clásico. Yeah. And I put into my WhatsApp group and some other places as well, the Femenil, like, give me hope for FC Barcelona football. What do you think about that? Does that give you the same kind of feeling as well?
So I think we both feel the same vibras or sensaciones, whichever way you want to go with that. But whereas you're looking forward, it made me look back, and the only way I could describe it was it felt like a really comfy pair of slippers. I was like, I remember this feeling. And so that was my biggest takeaway, was it felt like watching the Barca of many years ago, which was good. So does it give me hope? Do you know what? Not really, if I'm being honest. I don't want to be a Debbie Downer on that, but I think, you know, the men's team have got so many problems, as we spoke about before. But it was just really nice to see a team playing with what I think we all would like to see as our style. Moving the ball well, wanting the ball, creating space. The pitch looked massive. And I think that's, again, it's just a sign of good movement. Really technically gifted, brave on the ball. And I thought it was amazing. And what was really nice is, so my boy, who's 8, so there's no malice behind this question, said, so daddy, are men better than women at football? And I said, no, that's not the case at all. I said, you know, it's a game for everyone. And then obviously after the 5-0, he was like, yeah, Barca women are incredible, aren't they? And so it was just a really nice introduction to him on a much bigger topic that we don't have to go into, but, yeah, what a performance. What a team.
Yeah, and, you know, let's just recap a couple of the highlights there. Obviously, 5-0 victory for the Femini. And I think one of the things when I was watching the match is just seeing the smiling faces of the crowd. I don't know if you kind of picked that up on that. Everyone was having a good time. Like you just said, good vibes, you know, good vibes all around with the play. And let's just pick out some of the players that maybe stood out to you, because I know, you know, you haven't really been following the Femini, but you watched the match, because we were all talking about on our WhatsApp group just how good the match was. And my first question is, who was the player or players that stood out to you, you know, kind of the first time watching the Femini?
I think the entire front three as a block, as a unit, played exactly as I'd want my front three to play. The movement was subtle. It wasn't lung-busting runs, and it wasn't static. It wasn't three people out there doing their own thing. They were always on the move, but always subtly. The way we used to see, where, you know, people would say, Messi just walks. I can't believe that, you know, I can't believe that Eto'o gets all these goals when all he does is run in these 10-yard spaces. Yeah, it's because defenders don't know where they're going. And I thought that was the thing that stood out to me, was that at the top of the pitch, we never stopped. But it wasn't eye-catching effort. It was just really sensible positioning. And I think one of the big frustrations that we have with the men's team right now is in the front three, we look like we haven't got a clue what we're doing. At best, we get great effort and no real brains. Whereas I think what we saw with the Femini on the weekend was poetry at times in terms of the positions they were taking up. And defenders didn't know what to do. They just did not know whether to go, whether to stay, go with runners. There was always an overlap, but the overlap wasn't, you know, it wasn't really obvious, so it wasn't defendable that much. And it was just nice. It was just nice is a terrible word, but it was just nice. It was, what time did it kick off? 11 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So it was a cup of tea and just some real good feelings.
Yeah.
What about you? I mean, who stands out for you? Because you know them better than me.
Yeah, and I want to kind of go back to when I saw them in person last spring with the Peña tour. I was with Remy, and we were watching the match. Mm. And the first person we both highlighted immediately was Caroline Graham Hansen. To me, the way she plays the right wing is the way that you would want anybody to play the right wing. Her moves always have a destination, as I put in the group. Yeah. I said, her movement is like, I'm want to go to the corner. How am I going to get to the corner? This is what I'm going to do. It's never like complete impromptu of like, I just ended up with space and here I go. And by that, she almost scored a golazo off the crossbar. Mm-hmm. She made the defense look so outnumbered at times, the way she was able to move and stop and shoot, but also the confidence. You know, she's a world-class player, and you can just tell by the confidence of, you know, the technical ability she has, the veteran savviness she has. To me, when I watch her, and especially in person when I saw her, she, like, I love watching her play, especially in this system as the winger on there. So to me, that's the first person I have to highlight, because every time I see her playing, she elevates the team to another level.
Yeah, and I think this is where good forwards really earn their coin, right, is when they can give confidence to the rest of the team that they will find a space, that they can receive the ball when it's given them, and they can do something with it. You mentioned, obviously, the golazo that would have been incredible off the bar. We missed quite a few chances, which I thought was nice to see resilience. They could have easily have gone in the huff. That's a very British term. Had a bad mood and got down on themselves. Instead, they went in at halftime 3-0 up, where it could have easily been a frustrating 1-0. So, you know, I think those those chances obviously didn't, they perceived them as good chances rather than bad misses. But I think this is where a good forward line can really help you. It's not just getting goals, is it? It's about giving confidence, and it's the willingness to find space. And that's, you know, if you're doing a direct compare and contrast with where we are in the men's team right now, as I said earlier, that's the biggest thing that jumps out, is that we've got people who know inherently how to use space well. They're not tripping each other over each other's feet. They're not making it easy. The game isn't, you know, entirely in front of the defense that they're playing against. It was really, really good to see.
Yeah, you brought up a good point about how they made the pitch look much bigger than it was because of their movement and their spacing and their passing. I mean, just think about how many breakaways they had and the way they were able to create opportunities, you know, when they were in the attacking third. And I think having that variety is something we crave on the men's side. But just to be able to break that, right? Obviously, you have a world-class sprinter in Salma, right, up the middle. She missed some really good chances. I think she had like at least four quality one-on-ones. Maybe that is something she needs to work on, because she usually doesn't play up the center. She usually plays on the wing. But man, just to have that luxury of speed, and obviously you have Hansen on the right. And again, like you said, they could have easily kind of maybe had a little bit of a sour attitude of not converting. But again, you know, when you are, you know, having opportunity after opportunity after opportunity, you know you're going to break the, you know, break the bank eventually, you know, and that's exactly what happened. 3-0 before the half. Now, the other player I want to bring up is obviously Aitana. I mean, for me, she's my crush right now. I love her. I think she, whatever she does, is glorious on the pitch. And watching her play, the way she has taken kind of that next level, obviously being the Ballon d'Or winner, obviously that comes with the accolade. But now the way she is kind of managing that midfield, kind of taking that away from Alexia in a way, and the movement that she had a goal and an assist, but the assist to me was very, and I hate to put comparisons, but I mean, it's just something that, you know, you see it just comes right off. It's very Iniesta like the way she was able to push that on the end and then cut that back. What was your kind of impressions of seeing her play, you know, in this match, and just the way she was able to, you know, control the midfield and also just be so dangerous in attacking?
Yeah, I think the comparison's interesting. And I'm fairly sure, could be wrong, fairly sure that she has referenced the fact that she grew up watching him, right? And you can see, as you've said, you can see the style of play. I think you watch games sometimes, don't you? And I'm going to say something really obvious here, but you just see players that are on a different level. And I think it's a part of the pitch where if you're good, if you're very good, you look incredible. You know, it's easy to get lost in there. So when you stand out, and you can see why she's winning the rewards that she's, why she's winning the awards that she's winning, why she's held in such high regard. I think it would be easy to dismiss the fact that it was a hammering and say, well, yeah, but you know, it was Izzy's performance. That's a big game, big pressure. And I think sometimes people can win big awards and go into their shell. You know, they can feel the burden, they can feel the weight. And yeah, she just plays in a style that's free. It is Iniesta like, obviously. I think that's more about the control on the ball and, you know, the kind of almost grace across the pitch. But yeah, I mean, obviously I can't really talk with any knowledge at all about things that have gone on before and whether, you know, she's picking up a mantle of someone else. If I'm honest, that I'm not your guy for that. But just as a direct analysis of the game that was played, you can just see some players that are on different levels. And I think you're right, the two people that you've called out by name, they just look different class, really.
Yeah, and they also have, you know, I think a really great mixture of veterans, you know, like Hansen, for example. And they also have youngsters who are coming in, and they came in the second half with about 10 minutes, like Vicky, for example, and they come in and they score. Yeah. And you can just see the talent that is oozing out of the – and the way they're doing the scouting for this team is really, you know, exceptional. I'm really proud of what FC Barcelona is doing with the Femini, because, you know, obviously they played at the Montjuïc. They had about 37,000 fans. You know, this is something that we can really use as a revenue to really help us get out of the dark, you know, with the men's team and help with the club as a whole. But more importantly, I just think, you know, as we talked about the good vibes, I think also, you know, more people can go to these matches and really support the Femenine. It just touches on an audience that maybe was not, you know, connected with FC Barcelona football. And now this kind of connects with young girls, women, anyone, you know, anyone that wasn't maybe into the men's team. So I think that's also a unique point to point out.
Yeah, definitely. And it's the feeling's different, isn't it? And we've had this conversation before. It's going back a little while. I think it was, we've talked about it a lot when we talk about away games and atmosphere and what you want and things like that. And I think I went through a period of my life where all I wanted to be was in the midst of mayhem when I went to football. You know, definitely had a few years hanging around with groups of people that I shouldn't have been with, and blah 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 blah. And I loved the animosity, and I loved the maybe the danger of football. And as I've sort of matured and got older, I look at it now, and what do I want out of a game of football? I want to be entertained. I want it to be fun. I want it to be a good atmosphere. I'm sort of over the all or nothing perils of football, in the sense of I don't necessarily need two tribes going to war anymore. You know, I'm kind of all right with that. And so I looked at the atmosphere, as you mentioned earlier, I looked at the crowd. I looked at small things. I looked at the attitude of the Barca bench. I looked at the fact that things were celebrated in a genuinely collective manner. Like, and that's not to be patronizing. I hope it doesn't come across that way, but it was all that's good about football, really, without getting too hyperbolic about it. Whereas I think in the men's game, and it might be the same across women's football in general, again, I'm the last person that should be giving kind of any perceived wisdom here, but in the men's game, I think we're losing the battle for football a little bit. I think we're losing the ability for teams to try and make football a sport rather than an all or nothing capitalist competition. Again, that's gone very deep very quickly, but you know, I think it can be quite antagonistic, quite hostile, certainly very expensive, very inaccessible, very fraught with many problems that we see the world over. Whereas it just feels different with what the Barca are doing with Femini. It feels like football's at the heart of it. Whereas I think on the men's side, it feels like money's at the heart of it. And I think what you saw is exactly which was a good day. You know, I think the fact that away fans can mix with home fans by and large in Spain is something that's rightly lauded. You know, we saw Madrid shirts in the crowd, and rightly so. They had the right to go and watch that game and feel all right with that. And I'm kind of over the horrendous atmospheres and stuff like that. And it's nice to see that football can win. And I mentioned it maybe the last time we spoke. The only thing right now that can truly be held as Mesquion club within Football Club Barcelona is Barça Femení. And, you know, to go and play like that and that style, it just encapsulates where we are, I think, which is that we've got a shining light in one part of the club and we've just got a whole load of problems elsewhere. And I think the men's team could do a lot worse than look at what they're doing and see if they can replicate. And some of that starts with just trying to get the soul back into what we're doing. Let's try and, you know, get the fun back.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And just to kind of tie this off, you know, the Femini, again, they've been dominating the league and they're currently right now in Frankfurt. They're going to play the next match in group stage for Champions League, where they are obviously the table leaders. And right now in the league, they are 27 points ahead and they are leading that as well. So, again, they are definitely, like you said, the light. Now it's just really kind of, you know, when you're this dominant, it's how many titles can you win, right? To put you as the all-time, you know, in the pantheon of greats now, right? I mean, they were able to get over the hill last year with the Champions League, even though they were down 2-0 at half. And now they were able to get through that. And so now it's a matter of just collecting those titles, right? I mean, to really set aside at women's football. And I also think what's great about the team, just to kind of tie it off as well, is, you know, being a reference point on this movement and equality for football allows you to entertain the best talent and to retain that fun football, right? And so it's going to be interesting because, for example, Alexia Putellas, her contract ends this season. She did get an offer to go to the U.S., so we'll see how that develops. But at the same time, if she does leave, the team is not so desperate to keep her. They can just keep rolling and bring in youth. Yeah. So that's in a good way of that. So I don't know if you have any lasting thoughts or comments about the match, obviously with the 5-0. I just have a quick stat for you on that. Then I found that with the, you know, just to tell you the domination of the Barcelona had 20 total shots on goal to Madrid's 3. So that it's is crazy. Just, yeah, I know it's crazy, right?
Yeah, it's mad. And as we talked about in the WhatsApp group, you know, there's various different ways of watching it. And I have a DAZN subscription. You know, boxing is a real love of mine. And so I pay for DAZN for boxing. And if I'm being honest, I've never really got into Femini or whatever. It's never grabbed me, if I'm being brutally honest. But I think it's given me some real food for thought. So I don't think I need to eat any humble pie or anything like that, because I've never been disparaging of the women's game at all. Far from it. I've just never really invested the time in it. And I think what the performance shows me is that I really need to start putting some more focus on that, because that was some of the most enjoyable football I've seen in a long, long, long time.
I think it came at the perfect time. You know, there wasn't really any matches at that time. I think if so, my two gripes with this is, you know, Liga should have done better to market this, to have this maybe later on, because they have a huge fan base in LATAM, and this was too early, you know, kickstart for that. And then obviously, you know, my gripes, you know, I pay for the Movistar football package and I could not watch it on my TV, even though the zone has six channels here at Movistar. I had to find a link. It was a nightmare. I was able to watch, you know, I'm a fan of this team and I want to watch it on TV. I don't want to just stream it. You know, everyone's like, oh, just use Amazon. I was like, man, I'm paying this much money. Like, the least you can do is just put it on TV. That's it. Anyway, they have a lot, you know, they're still fighting for the titles. They are definitely the favorites for all three. And so we'll be following them as well. All right, let's get into some of the bad news and talk about the philosophy of football, because I'm curious about this. We'll try to keep this short, but obviously, you know, we got the bad news over the weekend about Gavi's injury. And obviously there was a lot of debate about the Spanish national team and also Barcelona on how to protect players. And really quick, you know, I don't know if you know this, but in the NBA, this is a hot button topic about load management, right? Because the game now in all sports is faster and more powerful than ever, right? And this is the thing. And when you're asking these players to have the output that is expected of them, as it was maybe 10 years ago, 30 years ago, we are just seeing the culmination of injuries that are happening. Now, I know that with all these tournaments and all this stuff, it's money for the players and it's, you know, it's, this is all the system. But at the same time, I think we can find a happy medium somehow to protect the players and also get entertainment as well. You know, I don't know what the answer is, but man, seeing Gavi's injury, and especially we got the diagnosis from Keegan, who was our WhatsApp orthopedic surgeon, which was great to get that information. But man, you know, he's going to be out for the rest of the season. He hopefully can come back for the Euros, but who knows? But again, you know, what are your kind of thoughts, obviously, on Gavi's injury? I mean, let's talk about Gavi's injury on its impact to FC Barcelona for this season. Let's start with that point.
I think it's a big question, right? And the reason I say that is I don't think we know what we have in Gavi until he's gone, in much as the same way we've been there with a few other players in the past. Now, I think Gavi is incredible. I've been on record saying I think you build a team around him. But he emerged and he stayed. And that's really unique, really rare. I mean, even Messi, if you think about it, kind of, he was on the bench a lot and he kind of got drip fed to an extent. It still felt rushed for an 18-year-old at the time, but it was still reasonably phased. Gavi arrived, he stayed. And because it wasn't like Pedri, who we'd signed, he kind of emerged seemingly from nowhere. And so there's been some interesting noise around Gavi. I think some people think he's rash to the point he needs to sit and learn. Some people think that rashness is actually passion. You need to build a team around him. And there's lots of different opinions. All, I think, meet in the middle and say he'll be great in the future. So I think there's two strands of it. One, it's obviously devastating for him as a person, and that's fundamentally where we need to be. Secondly, I said two strands, it's three, sorry. Secondly, as a team, I think it inherently makes us weaker. I think it gives us a real resourcing headache. Thankfully, there's some rules in place that we should hopefully be able to take advantage of, especially with the fact that it allows us to overlook financial fair play. And I think the third one, is that I think it allows us to truly understand what we have with him. And I don't want to say it will be a good thing, because it can't be. But I think it will answer some, it'll answer some questions, to be brutally honest. So I think there's three avenues that we can explore depending on which way you want to go. But it undoubtedly makes us weaker. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely makes us weaker. Now I'm more concerned about what Xavi's going to do with this lineup, because he had depended so much on Gavi, right? Gavi basically has been playing almost every minute available for the last year and a half under Xavi, right? And I'm just concerned about how we go forward. And like you said, I think that's a great point. Maybe we don't realize what we have with Gavi, and now that he's gone, how important he really is, because it's kind of one of those things, right? Like all the things you mentioned, I completely agree with. The thing is, I know he's an important player, but also he's so young still. And we expect so much from him at this young age already.
100%.
As you said, I really think it's going to be interesting to see how Xavi deals with this, because I think, you know, Gavi was able to be kind of our band-aid for a lot of situations. And now that you don't have that, obviously we have Pedri coming back and De Jong coming back, but man, you know, this injury for Gavi, you know, this is one of the most, you know, difficult injuries to have as a footballer. I would say Achilles is up there as well. These two, you know, you just hope that he's going to be able to come back to become the same player and to play the same recklessness. But man, it just weakens our bench so much, you know, because he was able to patch so many holes.
Yeah, I agree. One thing that is interesting to see, to your point about what will Xavi do next, is if you look at the debate in the newspapers, it's been, will Barca bring in the number nine that they have waiting for them, ready to go? Did they actually bring this guy in January, or do they go and gamble on a pivot? Bizarrely, what this actually allows us to do is to do both, theoretically, because if we had money for one player, that now can turn it to, because of the financial fair play ramifications. So if we wanted to try and all drink some happy juice and pretend life's all right, what it could open the door for Xavi to is to bring in an actual pivot and to bring in an actual nine in the same window that we couldn't do before. Because I've seen rumours that were banded around, and some of them are decent and some of them don't fill me with much, you know, joy at all. But the theory is that we can now go and bring two players instead of one. And the two big gaps that we've got, in my opinion, is someone up top and someone in the pivot. And so maybe if we don't all fully agree that Gavi is the pivot, because we've discussed it together, but it's a gamble fundamentally because we don't know yet. So he might be great, might be terrible in that role exclusively. It could allow us to, you know, to literally fill both of our voids. But I think that's best case scenario. If you're war gaming, that's best case scenario. The worst case scenario, as you've mentioned, is that we can't replace him. We're one less down on the bench. Pedri comes back, he gets injured again. Dion comes back, he gets injured again. And we are genuinely up shit creek without a paddle.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the only good thing about this in that Real Madrid is also suffering from major injuries as well. So it's not just a FC Barcelona issue. It's a club issue that's happening around Europe. And we do have a question from Carlos. And, you know, this goes more about the blame to Spain. And he just asks, when will Spain stop abusing using Barca's young talent? You know, obviously talking about Pedri first, now this, and obviously what could happen with Lamine Yamal. I don't know, man. It's one of those difficult decisions because it's, you know, everyone has different interests, you know. For example, Lafuente has an interest to qualify. It wasn't a completely meaningless game, but it was against Georgia. And the other thing is, you're telling me you can't sub another player for I'm not trying to say the Gavi issue, but I'm just trying to say, like, to give some more playing time to other people. Are you really that concerned about Georgia, for example? You're Spain. I understand there's different interests, and I think that's the biggest issue, you know?
Yeah. Do you know where I struggle? It is on two things, really, related to that question. The first one is, I don't think we can have our cake and eat it. We can't simultaneously want all these young talents and not expect them to play their national team. Obviously, I think, Carlos, the question is more about load than playing. I fully take that on board. But fundamentally, to your point, if you're a national team manager, you should pick your best players. And if a player turns up and says he's ready to play, then I think they have a right to play them. That's the first thing. My main point of contention is just the way international football works right now. Bizarrely, for one of the most dysfunctional organisations in world football, I think CONMEBOL are actually one of the few that get it right. Because, you know, it's a big list of teams. You play each other. It's competitive. Most of those games have some level of ramification. Yes, don't get me wrong, a lot of the same teams qualify, but theoretically, I can see the logic. Where I struggle with European football specifically is, let's take that group, right? Now, I'm saying this as a Scot. I'm saying this as a very proud Scot, but I'm saying that as a Scot that understands where we sit in world football. If you're Spain, you look at your group and you say, right, Spain, in fact, forget the fact that you're Spain. Be any football fan that's watched football for more than 10 minutes. You look at that group and you say Spain will qualify, and then Scotland and Norway will fight it out for second. Probably Norway. Scotland might do a good job on a good day, but fundamentally, Georgia have got no chance. Cyprus have got no chance. Spain, therefore, in my opinion, have at best 50% of their games pointless. Pointless, because they'll take enough points to get through it. And if they beat a combination of Norway and Scotland once, they'll probably go through. So realistically, if you're Scotland, you have more meaningful games. But fundamentally, if we know that we should take six from Georgia, we should take six from Cyprus. If we take something from Norway, we go through. The vast majority of groups before you pick them up. And it's the same gripe I have with the Champions League because of the seeding system. You can basically go through, and with minimal exceptions, you can go, well, they'll go through, and you're debating second place. So if you're a big nation who have the biggest talent pool, what do you do? Because a lot of your games you should roll over and win. If you don't, all of a sudden everyone thinks you're terrible and you've got to keep these players happy. I just think international football is flawed and you can't simultaneously have the club product that they want to make all the money and go and send these players to the arse end of nowhere to go and play a meaningless game on shit pitches against shit players in shit conditions when they're already tired. So I think I personally have no issue with De La Fuente playing Gavi at all. He turned up to play. He should be ready to play. It's up to Gavi. It's up to his club to protect him. De La Fuente has one objective, and that is to pick the best squad that he sure. thinks he has available. And Gavi was objectively available. My big problem lies in international football in general. It is, by and large, a massive waste of time. And if Messi hadn't just won the World Cup, to completely make my point hypocritical in terms of how I feel about it, I would say the whole thing is pointless. Club football has just jumped the void now.
Yeah. I that's the thing, right? With the international football, it's just, I'm mixed because I still love the international competitions, and I know you have to go through the qualifications and do all the things. I've been thinking about this because I've heard on different podcasts everyone talking about this situation, and I was like, if I were the sports czar, of international football, what would I do to try to, think of a situation or a solution for this? And the only thing I can really think of is maybe just creating more spots for the club teams, maybe have more spots, because if you do have these injuries, you don't have the ramifications of your team, right? Like, it's not like, for example, with the money, isn't it? I know.
That's the money. It falls immediately.
I know. But that's the thing. It's like, for example, in professional football, you're allowed to have like two spots on the game day that are just like emergency, in case of emergency, you can use those players type of issue. Right. And that's what I'm just saying, because if you're going to, have these demands on these players, okay, I understand money, competition stuff, but also maybe have on the backside a little protection for the club to have maybe two more roster spots where they can have those, extra spots where, I don't know, maybe it's a under 21 or something like that. I'm just trying to think of different solutions because, like you said, we're producing the young talent. And of course, Spain wants to use those young talents to qualify. That is completely natural. And like I said, De La Fuente has no, for me, I don't have an issue with him as in to go for the best talent to win the games. I just don't like him as a person, as a coach. So that's a different thing. But again, I don't know how this gets resolved, because as we've seen Vinicius Jr. out for 8 weeks, Camavinga out for 10 weeks, so we have all these high profile. Yeah. We just saw in our WhatsApp group that we shared the starting 11 of ACL injuries. All these things. It's crazy to have even a starting 11, So,
yeah, I think to me, and this is just spur of the moment thinking, this could sound horrendous when I listen to it back, and it could fail within seconds. To me, there's two things that football needs to do. Number one is they need to remove the restrictions around being unable to not turn up for your national side. I think they need to remember that, because right now the process is if you're ill, injured, you have to turn up and they have to release you back to your club. Completely nonsensical. Imagine if you're based in Spain and you play for, the Ivory Coast. That's such a needless journey on so many fronts, environmental, financial, just ridiculous. They need to remove that and they need to put some more faith back into the clubs. I think the club should have more power to say this player is not coming, but you should have to give a reason and there should be a metric of where that load is. If you've played more than X percent of your games, surely that's a figure that people as clever as Keegan can work out, because I wouldn't try, but he's a genius. So I'm sure someone could work that out. But I think you should be able to have players say no more without ramifications. And I think the second thing is they need to relook at the format, and I think they should play less games, but they should be more meaningful. And then they should use friendlies to blood talent. So, for example, if you look at the Euros this year, England are always going to go through, Spain are always going to go through, blah, 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 blah. Would it not make more sense to play less games? So, for example, if you think only realistically three games are meaningless, put them into smaller groups, make those teams closer together. The Nations League format, minus the fact it's meaningless, basically, is actually really good. It just means nothing. My opinion, they need to take what they've done with the Nations League, but make that count, because those games are always they're large interest to watch because teams are closely ranked with each other, and it would mean more and they would play less games. Less games, more quality, bring them closer together. Stop letting big clubs and big countries get a pass to tournaments.
Yeah.
There is no fun. And I'm telling you this as someone who is from a nation that is largely shite at football. There is no fun in watching your team get beat 5-0, knowing that you're not going to qualify anyway. It is pointless.
or 14-0 like France.
Or 14-0. Yeah, what is the point of that game? What is the point of that game?
To break the record.
Everyone concerned.
Yeah, to break the record, as Deschamps said at halftime. He said, just to let you know, the record is 9. Something like this.
You know, like genuinely, apart from Olivier Giroud, no one won there. And someone goes and ends their career, which is possible. All it takes is one player annoyed, loses a pride, and just half someone. It's bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, going back with the Nations League, you know, it's one of those things, like you said, I like the format too, but just get rid of the Nations League. Like, that's that's the thing, you know, just focus on the Euro qualifying. It's just going to be a rough go now because, you know, Gavi is one of those players that we talked about in not only in the podcast, but also in the group and stuff. It's just, you know, he's one of those players that you love to watch for your team. You know, there are very few and far between of those players that have that fiery passion, and, you know, hopefully he has a speedy recovery. I don't know if you saw the video today that FC Barcelona published of him greeting the team. You can just see the love that everyone has for him. So that's the other thing. They know how important he is. And I also do love the awkward hug that Xavi gave him as well. So that's also fun for me. I love awkward hugs, man. I just love it. Like the Apollo Creed Rocky hug.
Yeah, you know? Like when me and you met in that bar in the
correct, exactly.
Did you see that alleged? Apparently, I only saw a tweet. I didn't see anything beyond that. But supposedly, Florentino Perez has sent a message to Gavi saying, you know, I need to get back stronger and all that kind of thing. I do wonder if that's how widespread that the concern is now going for the amount of injuries. I do wonder if it's gone too far now, and if after this season. You know, in the UK, you've had Klopp fined, I don't know how many times, complaining about it. Pep's whinged about it. And I think that's what it's been perceived, it's whinging, it's moans. I think now what it seems to me that it's now actually switching to genuine concern about how often players are getting injured. And if you've got people like Florentino Perez writing to an ardent Barcelona, you know, icon, I wonder if we've gone slightly too far, and hopefully something will get done about it.
I think it's curious too, because, you know, with all the data that we have, it's really hard to put into context because this is the first time we had a World Cup in the winter. You're talking about last fall being all the way played through, essentially, right? So, you know, hopefully it resets itself, you know, after the next World Cup that will be back in the summer. So hopefully that'll kind of reset itself. But yeah, I mean, it definitely is a genuine concern. And that's the thing, you know, especially from the club point of view, they invest so much money with these players. And, you know, we're not just talking about, you know, bottom feeder players. You know, you're talking top of the top of the food chain that provide eyes for television for the league. You know, that's the reason why you're kind of watching these matches for their superstar players. Well, Barca plays Rayo this weekend, early match, 2 o'clock local kick time here. Before we go, I do need to give a shout out to Navdeep from our Patreon group, who did an outstanding statistical analysis job about Barca's attacking this season. He provided I thought it was so great because he's like, I was bored at work and I just did this. And I was like, what? and you know, I love data. I work in data. So when I saw this, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And basically Navdeep broke it down for us and it was spectacular. So Navdeep, thank you very much for sharing that information with us. And it was funny because basically we came to the conclusion that our attack is shite. This is basically, but more statistical analysis of it, right?
Yeah. And that's the crux of my job, just going to banks and telling them that things are shite. it was very good. Props to him.
Yeah, so next match is Rayo, and we'll be back to La Liga this weekend. Craig, thanks for joining me as always.
Always a pleasure.
We'll talk next time.
Podcast Network. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.